afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Thursday, August 17th, 2017. Good afternoon, Alfred Adisk.
Hi, George Eliza. I think you've got it.
I got it?
Yep.
We should probably tell the listener we did a morning show today, and for some odd reason, I just mispronounced Al's last name.
Only two or three times.
And it was just bugging me all, you know, and just a very stressful day, and, you know, a lot of things to do here at Discount Gold and Silver, and it just, I had to get up really, it was just one of those days, and so I had to make sure that it was proper today. Just, you know, it's, I blame the tongue. But interesting afternoon, and I will tell folks what I think is the possibility of all of a sudden the reversal in the markets and the drop in the a gain in gold and a drop in the paper markets. Right now in the New York spot price aftermarket, you have gold up 510. 510 for gold at 1288, almost 1289. Silvers, pressure on silver down 0.07 at 1713. Platinum was down 2 at 979. Palladium was up $8 at 924. It was a positive day for the dollar. It's getting stronger. Earlier I looked at it, it was only up 0.13. The aftermarket 0.15 to the upside at 93.63, and crude oil was up 0.29 at 47.02. And the final numbers are just coming through. A lot of things happened this afternoon. The Dow was down 274 points, 1.25%, 21,750. The NASDAQ was down almost 2%. 123 points down at 6,221. The S&P was down a little over 1.5%, down 38 points at 2,430. Still pressure with the euro, with the dollar getting stronger, down 0.31 at 117. 10-year yield was down 0.03 at 2.20%. And where do you think that fear and greed index, what number do you think that's holding at today, Al?
2019.
So it dropped from, what was it yesterday, 32 to 19. That's a huge drop
in
that index.
That fear is more pronounced today than it was yesterday?
Yes, Al. If you paid attention, yes, Al. That's what it means. So it's interesting, and we did have the market to back that fear also. We're going to talk about a couple things before we get into some articles. There was a discussion about Gary Cohen. There was a New York Times reported that Cohen is upset and disgusted with Trump's response to the violence in Charlottesville, Virginia. And investors from a management expert, Jeffrey Sonnenfeld, told CNBC, hey, if Gary Cohen resigns, the market is going to crash. He says he doesn't want to be an alarmist, but there is a lot of faith that he is going to help carry through the tax reform that people are looking for. I think if he steps away, he said, it would crash the markets. My question is, if the statements would crash based on one man, a Goldman Sachs man, then I guess what pushed the markets to record highs is one man. Not great earnings, not great jobs, not great wages, but faith. The faith in one man, and that if he stays on the job. And if he leaves, everything that all these record highs were all for naught. And I don't know about you, but that would scare the heck out of me if I was holding a lot of paper investments.
Well, just for the sake of argument, suppose the man doesn't leave, but suppose the man has a stroke. Suppose he has a heart attack. He doesn't even have to die. Suppose he is just hospitalized and put on some sort of recuperation for 6 months or a year. Now what? The point is that this guy is not merely vulnerable, and therefore the markets are not merely vulnerable to whether or not he decides to be angry at Trump or not. The market is vulnerable if he gets hit by a meteor. All right, his building catches on fire, the market goes down. Building his office is in catches on fire, and the markets go down. It tells us that the markets are extremely vulnerable, and not just to politics.
Yeah, but basically there, and I get it. He's the Goldman Sachs. He was second in line in Goldman Sachs. They're betting that he can get, you know, help all this pro-business legislation by Trump. What I think he is really after, I think he's after the Federal Reserve chair. And, you know, the White House came out and said that, you know, he intends to remain in his position. Nothing has changed. La-da-da-da-dee. You know, they say, oh, you know, to calm the markets and everything, that the reports to this are contrary or 100% false. But we still got a little shakeup in the market. I'm not sure it was all based on this, but it possibly could have had something to do with it. But I think his agenda is to become and replace Janet Yellen.
Yeah, but I don't think he can do that if he quits. If he quits on Trump now, because he doesn't like what Trump said about Charlottesville, I don't see that Trump is likely to support his.
That's what
his
I mean.
Nomination
so, no,
for
but my
Federal
point
Reserve.
Is that's why he would stay.
Oh, that's why.
That's
he
why
stay.
He would
I thought
stay.
You're saying he quit and he'd still be looking for. All right. Well, I agree with that. I can
but also, there is a lot of contention between him and Bannon. Because Cohn has been pushing against the harsh trade restrictions and retaliations against China that others in the administration want, led by Steve Bannon, and he's against those. He don't want those. Bannon told the American Prospect, he was in an interview that was published Wednesday, that he clashes with Cohn on China policy. If keeping Cohn in such a priority and Bannon continues to be a liability, the D.C. and corporate establishment might breathe a big sigh of relief if that means Cohen's establishment-friendly economic and trade policies will win out. So again, it's all based on that. So again, not very stable, not based on fundamentals. Faith, just like in our currency. It's just a little bit
confidence.
Of faith. Confidence.
And what is that confidence in the currency about? It's confidence in the presumption that the debt can be paid. It's a debt-based monetary system. We're in over our heads in debt, and the whole thing is based on the confidence that the debt can be paid. And the reason that's important is because there's $20 trillion in national debt right now. And that means there's $20 trillion in U.S. bonds out there. And if we cancel the debt for whatever reason and we can't pay the debt, then however much of the debt we can't pay, the correlative amount of bonds becomes worthless. And our confidence in the debt being paid evaporates. And that's what it's all about. If we can't pay the debt, the confidence goes bye-bye. Right? And we can't. It's not generally recognized by the public yet, but we can't pay the debt. We've talked about it on the program a number of times, but this to me is the biggest story we've had in maybe the last decade. The debt is too big to be paid, and therefore it's not going to be paid, and therefore the correlative paper assets have to be wiped out. And if we wipe out half the national debt, we wipe out $10 trillion in bonds. They become worthless.
And that's your money, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, it's your money, it's your pension fund,
it's
in the banks, the banks are holding it as collateral, it's in safety deposit boxes, pension funds, risks, that sort of thing. If we lose our confidence in the debt being paid, and it can't be, it's not going to be paid, it averages out to something like $65,000 per person, last time I did the math on it, all right? That's 65 grand for Melody and 65 grand for me and 65 grand for you, 65 for your spouse and 65 for each of your kids. Family of four is $250,000 in the hole. Pay your fair share to the government, cost you $250,000. How soon can we expect your check? Uncle Sam is depending on you. Look, how many people have an extra $250,000 or how many families of four have an extra $250,000 to send to Uncle Sam?
Hey, I have
Not
a great
many.
Idea.
Not
great.
Many, and if you do have it, how many? Oh, sure, I'll send a check to Uncle Sam for $250,000. I don't mind. I regard it as my patriotic duty. Nobody's going to do that. The only way they're going to get that money is steal it. And if they do, what happens to you and me and everybody else after we've been robbed so the government can pay its debts? we are caught between that proverbial rock and the proverbial hard place, and there is no painless way out of this. But the confidence that holds the system together is ultimately the confidence that the debt will be paid. And when it becomes apparent to anybody other than, or a lot of people other than, you know, people like myself and Melody, and many of the people listening to this program, the debt's not going to be paid, you get that, all of a sudden, you know, the whole system goes down, house of cards.
I want to talk about one more thing. I want to talk about Barcelona. That's happening over there. At least 13 people have been killed, dozens injured in Barcelona after a van has plowed into pedestrians in a busy tourist street. And, you know, I kind of relate to this because I spent like 4 days in Barcelona, and we were staying right by where this happened. Barcelona, where we were at and what we experienced, was a very beautiful city. And more than 2 hours after a man was shot dead after driving through a roadblock in a Ford Focus and opening fire, ISIS has claimed responsibility for the attack. Terror police are also reported to have arrested two suspects. One is of Moroccan origin. They're being treated as terrorists. I mean, go on the internet and you see these horrible, horrible pictures. I saw one picture where this woman's legs, I mean, can't even imagine in what directions they were going. Just horrible. And it remains unclear how many attackers were involved in the incident, which is being treated by police as a terror attack. And, you know, they have a picture of the person that rented the van. I heard one person that lives there was interviewed, and they said that they were waiting for something to happen. They said there's been a lot of tensions with the tourism. They didn't explain why, but they said with the situations in Paris and all the other terrorist attacks around Europe, they were just sort of waiting for something to happen. And I love Barcelona. This happened right off in the main center. And there's a road, a shopping, it's all pedestrians, called Las Rambas. And we were staying right off that center on Las Rambas. And that place is packed with people. It's all lined with shops. And in the evening, the shops, you have little kiosks down the center. And, you know, it was just a lovely experience. And what I did notice, Al, when I was there, to the point where I had to comment on it, you didn't hear any police sirens. You didn't hear any ambulance sirens. The evenings were quiet. You go to New York and that's all you hear. That's all you hear is police sirens and fire sirens and, you know, ambulances and everything like that. And it was oddly quiet and void of that type of noise. And it was just bizarre. It's not like you saw police on every corner, but they were there, and, you know, they were still heavily armed. And this goes back about six years ago. But a terrible day in Barcelona. It's a lovely town. I really enjoyed it.
I think it was Franz Kafka who wrote a short story on the anarchist, I think is what. And he was a guy who walked around, and this is back in the 1800s, my recollection, late 1800s. Fictional story, but the man walked around with dynamite strapped to him. Nobody'd mess with him because they were afraid he would detonate the dynamite, but in the end he was sowing fear and terrorism. And the problem you have is, if you do anything and cause him to detonate, everybody becomes even more fearful. And where I'm going with all of this is that the terrorists, if they're willing to play this game, they can be extremely effective, surprisingly effective. For example, in Barcelona, what do you think this is going to do to tourism in Barcelona over the course of the next 12 months?
Same thing as did in England and France.
And that was diminish the tourism?
I'm sure it was diminished to some degree, people go back and...
They go back, but I mean, if you diminish it by 5%...
You can't let their fear...
No, I get that, but suppose 5% don't go. What difference does that make to Barcelona? Are they dependent on having that 5% of tourist dollars come into their community? And what if that 5% doesn't happen? What if it doesn't happen? They have consequences, adverse consequences for Barcelona that may not be felt for a year or more from one event. Huh? And these terrorists can be surprisingly effective, and it tells us something. It's only one or two. It's not as if you've got 100,000 men marching around being terrorists. You've got a relatively small number of people. Well, do you really want to let them in the country in the first place? If you really want to be sensible, maybe you shouldn't open the doors to let refugees into Sweden, for example. Sweden's got nothing but trouble. Well, I won't say nothing, but they've got a lot of trouble flowing from the refugees they allowed in because, oh, we want to pay, want to kumbaya, let's play, sing kumbaya and welcome everybody. It's just stupid. It's self-destructive. It is naive. And it's inexcusable. It's evidence of how far we have gone with a philosophy of inclusiveness, one world government, and we're all the same and rest, that sort of thing. And the truth is, no, we're not. We're not all the same. Some of us embrace cultures and values that are completely contrary to those embraced by others. And when you try to mix those two groups, there is ultimately violence. You're not going to get people who believe in one system of values and set them down with people who have a different, entirely different and contradictory system of values. They're not going to just sit down and eat at the same table, at least not for long. There's going to be conflict, and if you don't want the conflict, maybe you have to respect your own culture, your own borders, and say, this is who we are, this is, and we're going to keep it for us. So the terrorists, well, you let them into Spain, let enough of them in there, and I don't know what can be done to stop them, but I'm just saying, and you can't stop. All right, you cannot absolutely stop all terrorists and or illegal aliens from coming into the country, but you can reduce the numbers, and that reduction is going to make a difference. It doesn't mean you'll be free from the problem, but you'll have less of it. And most people don't want to talk about it. That's not politically correct to say that's not politically correct. But nevertheless, it's what needs to be said and needs to be done if you want to avoid that, to at least reduce that kind of problem they're seeing, the kind of problem they're seeing in Barcelona.
What's interesting is the CIA came out and they warned Barcelona that there was, that they would have an attack like this. I think it was like 2 months ago in the near future. I'm not sure the time frame, but
which
they did warn.
Which
kind of makes you wonder if they can warn.
Yeah, no. Why can't they stop?
Why can't they
prevent?
Why can't? Yeah. And they track these guys. They always know who they are.
unless they already work for the CIA. Yeah. I mean, it's another one of those things. Just shakes your head. Make it shake your head. Wince.
13 people, and I'll guarantee you more.
That's an unlucky number, Melody. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis. See that melody? I can pronounce it.
You mispronounced my name a few times.
No, I never did.
Yes, you have.
I've never done it in the past, but I may do it in the future.
Well, you know what? For so many years, I did pronounce your name wrong.
Yeah, I know.
And then, you know, and
it didn't bother me particularly. Most people do mispronounce it. I'm about the only one who pronounces it the way I pronounce it. People say A-Dask and A-Dask and rest of that. My name is Addis. Huh?
Yeah. I've always had difficult names. My maiden name was Fayola.
Fayola?
Fayola. And, well, if I told you my other name, then it would give away how many times I was married. So I'll just say, I'll just say with my maiden name, Fayola. So, yes, folks, I was married more than once. So, so people always mispronounce my name. They mispronounce Melody so many times. So
I've never mispronounced Melody.
I've had people mispronounce
I may have Melody. Slurred Cedarstrom.
But
three syllables in the same name, that's a little too much for me, Melody.
Anyway, folks, we're still looking at gold, and again, strong down. I mean, 1% when you're looking at 22,000, it's really not a big deal. But the fear gauge, there's a lot of fear out there, and
there's going to be more.
And there's going to be more. And I do think we've hit the peak. And I don't think we can go over, unless some miracle comes out of Washington and with infrastructure. And he's going to have, Mr. Trump, President Trump, and he's going to have a very difficult time trying to get any type of tax cuts done now. And, I mean, this is all part of it, too. I mean, they are able to stop him in his tracks. And so tax reform is going to be difficult. Infrastructure is going to be difficult. And what about the battle of the debt ceiling?
That's a long ways away, Melody. A couple of weeks. The way the world is turning, we're only concerned about what's happening in the next 90 minutes or so. That would be as far out as our horizon goes. But the debt ceiling, I don't know, this what, the 15th, 29th of this next month?
Well, they constantly move, and I think it was 29th of September, was October. Then they backed it up to the 29th, so who knows? It might be even shorter, but they're going to have to address it sooner than, September 29th. I don't remember when they get back from their holiday.
Yeah, I think it actually has to be addressed by September 15th. And if it's not, if they don't do something by September 15th or thereabouts, then on September 29th, the government, in theory, runs out of money. All right, and the government's going to have something else is going to happen, or the government will be unable to pay at least some of its bills. And we talked earlier in the program about the idea about confidence. What confidence in what? Confidence in the debt being paid. If the government goes to the debt ceiling and they mess this up and they don't resolve it, and I think they will, I think they have to, therefore they will, they'll get some sort of a resolution to this problem and we'll be okay for the next 12 or 18 months. But if they don't, it will be evidence that we can't pay our bills. And that will attack at that fundamental confidence. People won't necessarily get it and understand it. It doesn't mean that the world is coming to an end if they don't handle the debt ceiling properly. But it does mean that it could contribute. Take another step down a path where people begin to say, I don't think this debt can be paid. And when enough people lose confidence in the ability of government to pay its debts, to me,
well, I don't
that's
think
one
it's
of
gonna...
the hallmarks that says, now this thing is going to start going downhill.
I don't think it's going to be like that. I don't think it's going to be a gradual belief that people are losing confidence. And it's like, oh, gee, these people lose confidence today. These people lose. No, I believe something nasty is going to happen. It's going to happen overnight. We're going to wake up to a brand new world. And, you know, there will be no confidence based on whatever that situation is going to happen, because it'll be so out of control. No one will be able to do anything. And I do believe this country and around the world will become frozen for whatever is about to happen.
We talked earlier this week, maybe previous week, I don't recall, but in the last 10 days or so, about the idea that the stock markets, the effect of computerization and high-speed trading in the stock markets. And the article that we were reading from explained the computers are self-programming.
I don't care.
Well, my point is this. If those things ever do get out of control, you can have a flash crash that will make, they had one in June where, I don't remember, one of the corporations lost 40% of the value of its stock in a couple of seconds. And then it was regained. It came back up there shortly thereafter. But just the same, the point is, if you have people running the switches, they're slow. If computers running the switches, they're fast. If the people are running the switches, they can use a certain amount of judgment. They can slow things down. Right? But those computers, under the right circumstances, they can fall. And there's no telling how far the markets can drop because the computers all of a sudden came up with some sort of a program that was self-destructive.
It won't even matter because people won't even be able to get through to their brokers in order to sell. The lines will be either shut down, turned off, because these brokerage houses don't have the funds. They're underfunded. They don't have the liquidity to pay. Either you'll have flash crashes or the computers will just freeze. Mm-hmm. They'll be shut down. Everybody forgets that 9/11, they didn't trade. Wall Street didn't trade for what, 3 days, 4 days? Into the next week. But gold traded, I think, the next day. I don't have the dates correctly, but gold became back online prior to the paper markets. And they'll just shut the markets down just like they did for 9/11. And we'll see the same thing, only this time the markets won't come back on. It'll be shut down and that's it. But gold traded. We could still trade. We couldn't do all trades depending on what inventory we had, but mostly we did freeze too, because we didn't know what prices were going to be when they started working again. And you're going to see the same thing, only this time you're going to see gold go from, you know, 1500 to 3000 probably in a day or two, based on, you know, exactly what all is happening. And that is what I do predict, and I do see the slow, gradual decline of our economy, of our currency, sure, we've seen record markets, but there's still been a decline, not just here and around the world. This is the slow leading up to that overnight situation. And it could be any situation.
Well, I think it can be like Lehman Brothers, which is sudden in its own way. All right. Everybody assumed Lehman Brothers would last forever, and all of a sudden it was gone.
It could be China coming out and saying, hey, you're going to put restrictions on us for trade? Here, take your dollars back. Here, we're dumping. Russia could do the same thing. We already know Russia's trying to wean itself off the dollar. You know, you see these other countries. What if it happens at one time? It could be some sort of a natural catastrophic event that could put everything in a whirlwind
and freeze the market. It could be any number of things.
But whatever it's going to be, huge.
Yeah, maybe. I agree that some things can be huge. But from my perspective, I can understand why the markets, because they're driven by computer programs that no one really understands anymore, it could be a lightning, it could be a flash crash. The market could drop just incredibly in a relatively short period of time. That's conceivable, but I'm still inclined to think that the balance of it will be a step-by-step going down, much like the Great Recession. It did not happen all in one night. We went down, then another down, another step down, another step. It took
about 18 months. And that recession will be nothing like what we experience now.
We shall see. But the threat of an instantaneous crash, you know, I'm using the word instantaneous, a certain amount of exaggeration in the use of that term, but the threat of an instantaneous crash is more credible today than it was in 2007, 2008. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm saying it was not possible then. It is possible now. But even then, you know, when I think back about it, Bernanke said we were within hours of a complete meltdown. Now, it took us, I don't know, weeks or months to get to that moment where we could have a complete meltdown if he didn't start pumping money into the economy and the banks or whatever. But just the same, we were within hours, according to them, of a complete meltdown. Now, that indicates maybe, you know, maybe I spoke too soon when I said we couldn't have had it 2007, 2008. Maybe we could have had it, except the Fed jumped in and stuff. The question is it more likely to see an instantaneous meltdown today than it was 10 years ago? And the answer is yeah. You know? Doesn't mean it's going to happen. Doesn't mean that's what's going to happen. But the possibility, probability strikes me as higher today than it was 10 years ago.
You know, I don't want to dwell on this. I just want to make a quick comment. Because yesterday we had talked about various, about one report. And again, I don't want to dwell on this. I just want to make this statement.
I don't get to say anything. Is that what you're saying? You're right. I don't want to dwell on this.
I don't want to dwell on it, Al.
And you shut your mouth.
And ask. Uh-huh. But a Missouri senator, now this is from the Daily Caller. And I don't know if, you know, it could be fake news, because I didn't have time to research it like I normally do of everything that I talk about here on the program. But so it's from the Daily Caller, a Missouri senator, Maria Chappelle Nadal, or Nadal, N-A-D-A-L, acknowledged on Thursday that she wrote a post which read, "I hope Trump is assassinated." Now, this is a senator. State senator, in a now-deleted Facebook post. She made the comment in an exchange with a left-wing activist who claimed that his cousin is a Secret Service agent. Chappelle Nadal confirmed to a reporter with St. Louis TV station KMOX that she posted the comment. She said she put something on her personal Facebook page. It has since been deleted. She represents a district in St. Louis suburb. Let's see if there's anything else. There's been several comments from other senators. Senator Claire McCaskill said the comments were outrageous. She should resign, and that's exactly what she should do. She should resign.
Oh, she shouldn't just be resigned. I mean,
she should
be. There's a problem here. There's a problem. I'm not sure how far you can go with this, but there's certainly some sort of a problem that needs to be, that should be nipped in the bud. We talked about it. We had an article yesterday or the day before about some people claim that the government insiders are claiming that the government is getting ready to assassinate Trump. Now, this is interesting because it used to be, it was a lone gunman. It was Lee Harvey Oswald. It was somebody else. It was one crazy guy. Okay, but at least he wasn't supposedly working for the government. Now they're telling us before this kind of thing happens, this will be a government assassination.
Well, we don't know that.
Well, we don't know it, but you people know, are making the claim who are in positions
this,
of
you know, and again, I don't know.
They might know what they're talking about.
But, you know, I don't know if this is fake. But, I mean, to have a senator to make that type of a statement, she should be kicked out.
And who should kick her out?
She should be kicked out of her position.
Not just of her position. She should be kicked out of the party by the party officials.
Yes.
If she says it, you're out of here.
You're out of here.
I'm assuming she's a Democrat. Is that true?
Yes.
I can't imagine she's a Republican.
Yes.
The Democratic Party ought to say, they should step up and say, this is intolerable. You got to go.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know that they can force her to leave her position once she's been elected to it or appointed to it, but pressure should be brought on her to resign, and she should never again be supported by the Democrat Party. And the same thing would be true if she was a Republican. Republican Party said, that's it. You're done, kid. We might not be able to get you out of office right now, but you ain't never coming through another election with support of the Republican Party or the Democrat Party. I'll make you a bet it doesn't happen. We'll watch and see, but I don't think the Democrats... Well, I don't know.
What is wrong with these people? I can't ever remember where there was just so much hate. That is
It's not just hatred, it's desperation. People become radicalized when they can't put dinner on the table. Right?
This is a senator. She's got plenty of money to put dinner on the table.
She may, but she's
hatred. They're not any different than the people that they're complaining about.
I get that.
You know,
but I'm not really talking about that senator. She's in a position where she's doing okay. All right, but I'm talking about the kind of people who would approve of that statement. I think that kind of approval is, so far as the public is, say, well, yeah, maybe she's got a point. Well, insofar as they say that, I don't think it's a function of being civil. I don't think it's a function of being prosperous. I think it's a function of saying we're in big trouble, or at least I'm in big trouble, and therefore I'm willing to listen to some very radical suggestions, solutions, promises. It's the economic desperation, I think, that lays the foundation for this sort of
thought. And you know, and when you see this, it's like it gets contagious.
Yeah.
I mean, it just breeds in itself. Here, there's a report out of Florida. All of Florida's 97,000 state prison inmates are on lockdown and will remain confined to their dorms. Isn't that nice? Gentler word, dorms.
Yeah, right.
I thought they used to have cells, but they're dorms. At least through the weekend, in response to an unspecified threats about possible uprisings. The unprecedented step comes one day after the agency announced it had canceled weekend visitations at all of its 50 major institutions, as well as annexes, work camps, and reentry centers. Really not a lot of
conjugal visitations, Melody. Is that what we're talking
maybe.
About?
Maybe, yeah. No wonder it got them all fired up.
Yep, they'll get them.
Let's see if it comes up. Social media has been advertised in millions for prisoners' human rights rally on Saturday in Washington, but it's not clear who is spearheading the movement. But anyway, Florida inmates, their family, and civil rights groups have long protested the state's prison conditions. So, you know, they're on 97,000 state prison inmates are on lockdown because there's a possible an uprising from them. So, you know, and I'm sure they're not all in one place. Kind of makes you wonder how they communicate.
No, the communication is the government acted and they said we're not going to have any more of these visits. All right, which is not, we can joke about conjugal visits, but it also includes family visits and the rest, but it's enough to make people mad. You know, I mean, the government probably made a big mistake. They need to back off or there's going to be a problem. We're going to take a break, a couple of commercials, be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
You can bicycle to Maryland.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What's next?
Melody? Well, I do have a question from a listener. He says, hello, Melody. He says, should folks save, this is an on-air question, should folks save in gold and or silver instead of cash, given the financial stress in our system? And he likes to buy fractional gold pieces, and it accumulates. Yep. And I think it all depends on what's suitable for you. Absolutely. I think I always say gold is a savings account and silver is the checking account. Why would you want to hold on to that cash when we're going to have problems and it's going to be, you know, continue to devalue your purchasing power? Doesn't mean you shouldn't have cash. I think everyone needs to have some cash. And my rule of thumb is you figure out what your monthly expenses are, and it depends on how conservative you are. And, lots of people will tell you to stay, you know, under that 10,000 level, because once you have that cash, and if you want to spend it all at once, then you have the problems and so forth. So I tell my folks to avoid any of that, figure out what your monthly expenses are and multiply that by 3 or 6, you know, cover your expenses. And then if you want to put your savings into gold and silver, that's perfect. I have a lot of clients who buy gold and silver on a monthly basis in order. And over the years, I hear people say, oh, you know, if you don't have, you know, if you don't have more than, you know, $50,000 to spend, you shouldn't be buying gold. Well, that's not true. That's not true. You have to take into consideration what's suitable for you. And you certainly don't want to put money into gold and silver that you're going to need in 2 months. You have to make sure that it's something that you can save, that it is a long-term savings. And I have many clients who've accumulated a significant amount of gold and silver by doing it that way, and they have preserved their purchasing power along the way. Plus, it's a little more difficult if you save your cash in a savings account, or, you know, you put it under the mattress. It's real tempting to reach underneath that mattress, grab a handful, because you saw something that you want. With gold and silver, as easy as it is to liquidate, you just can't grab it on an emotion and spend it. So it makes it a little more difficult. And so therefore, your savings really do add up faster than if you were saving cash. So having some cash is important, but I think gold and silver is an excellent way to save.
I think everybody in the country and the world really agrees with you, or at least everybody who was interested in investing and follows precious metals at all. I mean, gold's got that 5,000-year track record. It has been the best investment since 2000. There's something about gold. It keeps on. It has it up. It has ups and downs, and everybody knows that. But long-term, up, up, up. As long as we have a fiat-based money system, as long as we have a debt-based monetary system, the price of gold has to go up. It may be that people in positions of power will try to resist that rise, but regardless, gold will rise. It will, not as fast as maybe would happen in a natural world, but just the same. You know, one of the things about it is the government keeps insisting they need more inflation. Government wants more inflation. You can't have credible inflation without the price of gold going up. They can't sit back and say, oh, we have inflation, but the price of gold's not going up. They're not going to be able to make it credible. It's one of the reasons government, if they want inflation, if they really want inflation, they have to allow the price of gold to rise. Maybe not as much as it would rise in a free market, but still it has to go up as evidence of inflation. And even if it's somehow prevented from rising, insofar as government is trying to cause inflation, inevitably they're going to face a moment when gold has to be allowed to rise. I don't even know if the proper term is allowed. Maybe you just get so far into inflation that it all breaks loose and the price of gold jumps up $1,000 in a short period of time. Right? And maybe there's nothing they can do about it. But there is reality. There is reality in this world. And you wouldn't know it to read the newspapers, and you wouldn't know it to listen to politicians, or a lot of them at least. But there is reality, and sooner or later it's going to overcome the illusions and the lies and the promises and the idiocy, and all of a sudden we're going to face reality, and a lot of people are going to be, I mean, they'd rather go to a real horror movie and get stuck in the horror than go to reality. And I'll face the creature, but don't make me face the truth. That's how a lot of people seem to think sometimes, or at least seems possible to me.
Well, I want to thank Mark for his question. And so, folks, if you have any questions you want to ask me, send them to discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. What's next, Dal?
I have an article here from that's amusing to me. This is from Business Insider. The headline is IMF, International Monetary Fund, of course. It's time to worry about China's dangerous debt. China's huge debt pile could trigger the next financial crisis as borrowing reaches unsustainable levels. This is according to the IMF. Look, China is a relative rational dealer, rational entity. If you're going to be concerned about a huge debt pile, there are piles of debt that are greater than China's, and the number one is that of the United States government. And it just cracks me up. I see this article. Oh, it's time to worry about China's dangerous debt. What about our dangerous debt? How about that one? Should we be more concerned with China's dangerous debt, or should we be concerned with our dangerous debt? Is there reason to believe that our government, we know how to handle debt? China, they're just kids, they're primitive, they don't understand how to handle debt properly, but our government, they know how to handle debt. I mean, if debt is a danger, the debt at the United States is far greater than the debt at China, a greater danger than at China. I say credit to the non-financial sector in China has doubled in the last 5 years. Credit to GDP ratio has jumped to 230% last year. Now, we don't have a debt-to-GDP ratio of 230% in this country. Our $20 trillion in debt is compared to something $16, $18 trillion GDP. So we would have, who knows, maybe a 120% credit or debt-to-GDP ratio. But that's assuming that our debt is only $20 trillion. John Williams at ShadowStats.com, he's warned for years that the real national debt is far greater than what is officially reported. He currently believes it's somewhere around $100 trillion. Economist Lawrence Kotlikoff has said it's around $200 trillion, including unfunded liabilities. The government's in the hole for 10 times. They admit to $20 trillion, but really they're in debt for $200 trillion. I don't know what the truth of the matter is, but if we were to assume that Kotlikoff was correct and that's really $200 trillion, then we're talking about something like 1,000%, 10 times. The debt is 10 times greater than the GDP. And China said, "Oh my gosh, China, their ratio is 230%. Ours could be 1,000%. If Williams is right, it's 500%. And it just cracks me up, an article, oh my gosh, look at those crazy Chinese. Look, it's like that verse in the Bible where take the plank out of your own eye before you go fussing trying to remove the splinter out of someone else's. This is an example. This is an illustration of that. We're a bigger problem than China. The article continues, citing the experience of other countries which have fueled growth via taking on debt aggressively. Gee, I wonder, Melody, can you think of any other countries? They didn't name them. but they say citing the experience of other countries who fueled growth by taking on debt aggressively. Can you think of any others?
Do you have an hour?
Well, we only really only need 5 or 10 seconds. United States, number one, are all fueled growth.
No, if I listed
on debt
them
aggressively.
All.
That's what quantitative easing is all about. Trying to fuel growth by borrowing money, taking on debt, and injecting the resulting capital or currency into the markets and or the economy. They fueled growth. They tried to get the economy started by spending more borrowed money. More debt fueled the growth during the Great Recession. That's what they were trying to do. And here they say, citing experiences of other countries which have fueled growth via taking on the debt aggressively, the IMF warned that the current trajectory of China's debt is dangerous. Yeah, it's dangerous on a global basis. It's dangerous on a U.S. national basis. It would be interesting to see how many economic and political entities there are in the world that have not been engaged in dangerous levels of growth. Scale of China's debt binge is revealed by the IMS, noting that to grow, this is interesting, to grow the Chinese gross domestic product by 5 trillion renminbi in 2015 to 2016, it took around 20 trillion renminbi of new credit. In other words, they had to borrow 20 trillion in order to make the economy jump by 5 trillion. How long can that go on? How long can you spend $20 to make $5? You can't stay in business under those circumstances. But that's what, to grow Chinese GDP by 5 trillion renminbi in 2015 to 2016, it took around 20 trillion renminbi of new credit. By contrast, and that was in 2015 to 2016, by contrast, in 2007, it required just 6.5 trillion renminbi of borrowing to do so. In other words, in 2007, you could borrow $6.5 trillion of renminbi to generate $5 trillion renminbi in GDP. It's not a winning, so you can't keep playing a game where you're spending an extra $1.5 trillion for every $5 trillion you generate. You can't play that forever. But now they're playing where you have to spend an extra $15 trillion. To get a $5 trillion jump in the GDP. I mean, this is the kind of information you look at and say, oh my gosh. I mean, talk about what fools these mortals be, and they say this is dangerous. No, it's not dangerous. This is suicidal. This is like playing Russian roulette. Keep playing. Keep playing. Go ahead. Keep spinning the cylinder in your six gun. Sooner or later, the bullet's going to come up under the hammer, and bang, you're going to have a bad hair day. This is guaranteed. Keep playing this debt game, and especially, you know, it would be a different thing if we could borrow $20 trillion, and we could get a $30 trillion jump in the in the U.S. economy. Okay, such a deal. If we could borrow $20 trillion and get $25 trillion increase in the U.S. economy. Okay, not so bad. But to borrow $20 trillion and only get $5 trillion increase in the economy, this is just self-destructive. You can't do this for long. This cannot be sustained. And it's evidence of the kind of madness that we're facing, not just in China. They want to point out, ooh, China, bad people, you know, crazy people, irresponsible people. We're responsible. Don't worry about our government. They're okay. We are, however stupid China might be about debt and renminbi, I guarantee you that the government of the United States is several times that stupid in regard to national debt and the U.S. dollar. And it just, it's to me, another one of these leaves in the breeze, another one of these articles that just says, uh-oh, you know, this cannot continue forever. And some people look at it and say, well, yeah, but they can hold it together for another 20 or 40 years or something. I don't think so. That's the only question. How much longer can this game be played? But the game has to blow up. It's going to explode. It's going to fail. And the only question is when. All right? Again, use that Titanic analogy. Yeah, imagine you're riding on the Titanic. You know it's going to hit an iceberg. You have peered into the future, and you know it is bound to sink to the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. Now, we know that, we just don't know when. When do you think it is prudent for you to get hold of a life or a life preserver? It's going to happen. It might not happen today. It might not happen this week. It's going to happen. It's going to go to the bottom of the ocean. We know that. We just don't know when. When is it prudent to get the life preserver? When is it prudent to get your space in the lifeboats? At what point in time, if you know you're going to have that problem, when is it prudent to say, okay, let's get ready for this? And let's get ready now precisely because we don't know. We know it's going to happen, but we don't know when. And that means it might not happen for a couple of years, and likewise, it might not happen for a couple of days. When is it prudent to get hold of your life preserver? And I'm saying now is the time to get hold of your life preserver. It is prudent. It might not be necessary. Problem may not manifest for who knows. It may be that they can put it off for a couple more years. I don't think so, but they might be able to. But now's the time. Do what you got to do. Take care of yourself. Take care of your family. Get ready because this thing is going down. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back on Monday. We'll be back tomorrow, excuse me. And in the meantime, we hope you all have a good evening. And may the good Lord bless you and me and Melody and Todd, the producer. Bye. Pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.